Momentum Energy is 100% owned by Hydro Tasmania, who in a single hour make enough renewable energy to fill 400,000 bathtubs with freshly popped popcorn, or spin 200 million disco balls all at once, or power an army of 10 million robot vacuums ready to take over the world! Or just help keep your leftovers cold. Either or. For a power company backed by someone who can do all that, switch to Momentum Energy. 100%.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Friday, the 6th of February 2026. Today, with the Bitcoin price continue to slide lower, we'll have the details with Peter Maguire from trading.com later in the show, but first to the Australian share market, which took a bollocking. The ASX 200 down 2%, its biggest one-day fall since Donald Trump's Liberation Day tariffs in April last year. Each of its 11 sectors finishing in the red. Technology, though, one of the worst, extending a months-long rout. The All Technology Index, which tracks the broader market's 48 top tech companies, is down nearly 18% so far this year, a lot of that happening in recent days. Technology One led the sector lower. Uranium producers also tumbled, like Deep Yellow. Property stocks also fell, including real estate website owner REA Group. It saw a 6% decline in buy listings in the first half of the year. The top performer was Brambles on the 200. The worst, Web Travel. One of its subsidiaries is facing a tax investigation in Spain. The banks finished lower, along with Rio Tinto, which walked away from a tie-up with Glencore, which we'll talk about in detail in a few moments. So, how are investors feeling? With tech stocks continuing to be smashed, precious metals significantly lower compared to their recent highs, commodity prices have turned south, and as I mentioned, the ASX having its biggest sell-off since Liberation Day. What's happening? I spoke with Lachlan Halloway. He's an equity market strategist at Morningstar to find out.
Well, look, I think it's pretty fair to say it's bearish and it's risk-off. In terms of what's causing it, I think it's a confluence of factors. Really, that started a couple of weeks ago when Donald Trump announced that Kevin Warsh would be the new Fed chair governor after Powell's term finishes. I think markets took that as a generally hawkish tilt. They expected Warsh not to be potentially as much of a puppet of the US administration, not to bring rates lower. And in that sense, maybe that means higher rates is not generally good news for equities or for risk markets. Or if it is more responsible monetary policy, not all that good news for things like gold, which have been a debasement trade. So that started to emerge when that happened. In my personal view, I'm not entirely convinced that potentially good policy responding to economic conditions rather than the whims of the president is bad news for markets in the long run, but the market didn't like it for whatever reason. So nonetheless, we moved on, and then we've had increasing concerns about AI and tech, starting in the US with earnings season for some of the big hyperscalers. We've obviously had Microsoft, Amazon out showing big investment in AI and not as much of the pulled forward, the accelerating returns and revenue growth that I think the market had expected. And the final narrative that sort of really emerged in the last few days is that this idea that software as a service, SaaS, is dead, that there will be agent and Gen AI bots out there creating software which can displace or disrupt the big incumbent platforms like Microsoft, Salesforce, Atlassian, Adobe, and those companies and their Australian counterparts have suffered big drawdowns.
We've spoken a lot on the podcast in recent weeks about the new Fed Reserve chair. So can we maybe focus a bit on this, the latest moves in AI and that sell down in software and tech stocks, right? The Australian tech sector is set to fall 13% this week. As you alluded to, it follows falls in the US. There are those concerns about how AI will eat into the profits of these software companies, especially. Overnight, Amazon was the latest to say it's going to spend $200 billion on AI investments. So what's your take on the sector and these fears of an overvaluation and that these companies are potentially spending so much money for maybe little financial return?
I think on the big investment cycle that the hyperscalers are undertaking now, look, we're not so concerned about, you know, the chance of of these returns playing out? I mean, all of them, basically, all the four large hyperscales say that they're capacity constrained. You know, they can't basically build that capacity fast enough. You know, revenue in the AI parts of business is growing very, very quickly. You know, for Microsoft Azure, we saw almost 40% growth rates. These are phenomenal growth rates. If you didn't look at the market reaction, you just looked at the actual results they were posting, I think you'd be pretty happy as a shareholder, but the market seems to want more. On the software side, you know, I think it's, yes, obviously these AI bots are a risk to incumbent legacy software platforms, and particularly so in sort of the more simple, basic software programs like, say, you know, the project management software for a small business. It's kind of easy to disrupt to create an alternative version of that. But for the big ingrained programs with network effects, let's say something like Xero in Australia, which is integrated on both the accountants and in the businesses, they have critical mass, have a network, that is very, very hard to disrupt. And I don't think we share the concerns the market has over the really big moated players that they'll be disrupted or destroyed by AI. It's interesting actually to look at sort of the, maybe a bit of an inconsistency in the way the market's thinking right now. On one hand, we have, okay, everyone's investing in AI and returns aren't going to be there, so we sell the AI sector. And then on the other hand, we have, well, AI is going to replace all of these legacy software platforms, which I would think bodes pretty well for demand for cloud and for compute. And yet we're selling off software companies. So this doesn't seem like, you know, if you believe that software's dead, it's probably good for AI overall. But the market doesn't seem to be treating it like that. So it's quite hard to piece together the narrative, but generally speaking, it's bearish and in our view, overdone.
Okay, let's talk about some news of the day. Rio Tinto has walked away from a possible merger with Glencore, saying that an agreement couldn't be reached that would deliver value to its shareholders. I think this is something like the third time such a deal has fallen through. So what happens now?
Well, I guess they both sort of spend some time apart. You know, Rio can't reapproach for 6 months under the UK M&A laws, so they're gonna have to both go away. And you know, we'll see. Time will tell. It's very hard to speculate on whether there will be another offer at some point down the line. Price and the control of the new company seem to be big sticking points. Maybe eventually they'll be able to get over those hurdles, but, you know, that's sort of to be confirmed. You know, for Rio, the attraction here, was really Glencore's, copper assets. You know, they are primarily tied to iron ore. It makes about half of Rio's earnings, and iron ore, the outlook is, you know, pretty structurally challenged, you know, with, in terms of the outlook for China's demand, of iron ore, its construction sector, its infrastructure sector. We can understand why Rio is looking towards a more new age metal like copper. Admittedly, the merits of buying copper assets at this point in the cycle at record prices are debatable. We can see strategically why Rio wanted to do it. I guess they'll have to look at their own business and try and internally develop some of their projects or look elsewhere for acquisitions. We don't know that yet, but nonetheless, they'll go away. This may re-emerge again, or it may not. But copper, to us, looks very expensive where it is. We don't disagree. We don't think it's all that bad an idea that this deal has they've both moved separate ways.
Okay. Right, reporting season ramps up in Australia here next week. What are the key themes you'll be looking out for?
Well, reporting season is a great opportunity to get a handle on what the Australian consumer is doing, particularly how domestic economic conditions are faring. You know, we think last year, early in the year, it looked like we were getting on top of the inflationary spike. Cost of living was starting to move into the rearview mirror. Then, obviously, we saw a reversion of that later in the year, which, of course, triggered that Reserve Bank hike earlier in the week. We'll be looking to see how the big retailers particularly are faring. Are we seeing some pullback, you know, in the sort of early months of January in the trading updates, as concerns of rate hikes and inflation started to rise? That's going to be a big sort of bellwether indicator for the health of the domestic economy. And also the banks too. They're always important. They touch almost all corners of the economy. Most of them are very richly priced. So how investors, stomach, bank earnings will also be of interest to us this reporting season.
So which company results are you most interested in and why?
Yeah, look, CBA, it's the bellwether for the banking sector and the economy in general. You know, it's come off its peak, you know, about 20%, but it still looks very expensive to us. You know, it's a bank that's very, very high quality business. No two ways about that, but it is very, very richly priced. You know, it's almost trades on AI, Magnificent Seven like multiples. So, you know, are investors going to be willing to keep paying very high multiples for a fairly modestly growing business? We'll find out. On the retailers, you know, bellwether retailers like JB Hi-Fi will be interesting, and also Woolworths and Coles, of course, on the defensive side to get a gauge of how the Australian consumer is faring in the early weeks of 2026 and later last year.
So given everything we've just discussed today, what are you then telling your clients right now, and do you still see opportunities for investors?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as much as these periods of really high volatility and big sell-offs are psychologically painful, you know, they certainly are periods of opportunity too. If you are a long-term investor and you're willing to look through the noise, because a lot of the time you see the babies thrown out with the bathwater, you see panic selling when you have these big narratives taking hold. That can expose opportunities like we're seeing now in a lot of the big US names like Microsoft, for example, which looks undervalued to us. I think for reporting season coming up in Australia, we're going to probably see a lot of volatility again. We saw a lot of it in August. Big, big blue chip moves which we haven't basically seen the likes of ever. So we're probably going to see more of that again this year. Staying focused, staying long-term, finding out what matters in a report, because usually it's not all that much that really matters for the thesis, and focusing on that as opposed to getting caught up in the noise is probably good practice for investors.
It's Lachlan Holloway there from Morningstar.
Noor Haider here, one of the hosts of The Guardian's daily news podcast, Full Story. Every weekday, we go beyond the headlines, taking you closer to The Guardian's journalism. Listen to Full Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Hot takes, heartaches, and South Asian stories that hit home for Australians. This is SBS Spice.
And while gendered violence is also a universal problem, it affects South Asian communities in a very, very particular way. And if we cannot tease out the culturally specific ways that are cause and effect for this type of violence, then there is little hope to understand resistances or to counter it.
Curious to hear more? Tune into SBS Spice on the SBS website or wherever you get your podcasts.
Quick check in on that Bitcoin price. It's been tumbling. It's now at around 66,000 US, falling 6% compared with this time yesterday. That's near the low since October 2024. The cryptocurrency has been pummeled in recent weeks, tumbling nearly 50% since the record high reached only 4 months ago. The recent market sell-off compounding those losses as investors reduce their exposure to so-called risk assets amid geopolitical and regulatory uncertainty. For more, I spoke with Peter Maguire from Trading.com. So Peter, Bitcoin down 50% since its record high back in October. A lot of that sell-off's happened more recently. Why this recent sell-off?
Well, I think it's hit the market by surprise. There's no doubting that, Ricardo. And when we take on board the huge move down since the 12th of January, it is 35% down, and the market can't keep up with it. 97,000, now it's 64,000, and it's approaching that technical level of 63. We've got the Clarity Act, which is an act that the Trump administration, in short detail, want to make America the crypto capital of the world. We've got to wait for the senators and industry leaders to unpack that and see how it moves forward. And there's time constraints on that. You've also had massive ETF flows, outflows of crypto from Bitcoin, about $800 million in the last 2 days. So that's a quick snapshot.
What role, though, is Bitcoin playing in the overall global market retreat that we've seen? Because the likes of precious metals, gold and silver, are falling with it.
Well, I think it's a carry-on in the sense of margin calls, and traders are very wary. What we saw was a dramatic uplift of copper and gold and silver. And that huge run-up has been, I think, we haven't seen that in, you know, since the 1980s, the early 80s with the bunker hunts. And that has been electric. So you've had silver in the last year go from $29 to $121. And now, what's it at? You know, the best part of between $75 and $80. And it's really, it's capitulated, and so is gold, off from those highs earlier in the week. So people are nervous. They're getting hit for margin calls. And I would think that would be working into the washout as far as crypto.
So ultimately, where do you see it going?
I think it'll find a floor. I'm interested from a Fibonacci retracement. That's a technical standpoint. 200%, it's going to be about 63,000 odd. 63,240. If it breaks that, 60,000's the next handle that I'm very, I think, psychologically concerned, because it's a big number. And if it snaps through 60, then, let's just see where it falls. But I feel as though the next matter of days and weeks are going to be very telling, not only for the crypto market, but also for precious metals.
That's Peter Maguire there from trading.com, and he wraps up the podcast for this Friday and for the week. Remember to click subscribe if you are listening on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. See you next week.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
Momentum Energy is 100% owned by Hydro Tasmania, who in a single hour make enough renewable energy to fill 400,000 bathtubs with freshly popped popcorn, or spin 200 million disco balls all at once, or power an army of 10 million robot vacuums ready to take over the world. Or just help keep your leftovers cold. Either or. For a power company backed by someone who can do all that, switch to Momentum Energy. 100%.